The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the NFB, Learning from the Experts, and A Blind Parent's Essential Guide to Effective Communications from Schools. From Reuters, Tesla is being sued over self-driving and autopilot error claims that are in error. From Futurism, scientists are puzzled over the James Webb Telescope images. From the ACB, Audio Description Awards are coming up. Their gala is November 29th. So let's get started. From NFB.org, Learning from the Experts, American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, Special Issue, The Federation in Partnership, Learning Together. Article by Brenda Lopez. From the editor, when sighted parents learn that their child is blind, they may be caught in a swirl of unanswered questions. How will their child learn to perform basic tasks such as dressing, walking independently, and using utensils at the table? What lies ahead in school? Will their child be able to hold a job, raise a family, and enjoy hobbies and travel? Where can they find reliable information on what comes next? In this article, Brenda Lopez recounts what happened in her family when her son Chris lost his sight at age 4. By connecting with active, independent, blind adults, she and her husband found their way forward. Our son Chris is involved in several programs for blind children through SAVI, S-A-A-V-I, Services for the Blind, an organization that serves blind children and adults in southern Arizona, where we live. This summer, he attended SAVI's summer program for blind kids, as well as the Bell Academy in July. He has a lot of friends through these programs, and he can't wait to get started. My uncle lost his sight as an adult. He held a job, lived independently, and traveled everywhere using public transportation. My husband and I knew that blind people could live active, fulfilling lives, but we weren't sure how we would help Chris learn everything he needed to know. I remember sitting with Chris in the hospital right after he lost his sight. They brought him his meal, and he didn't know what to do. We said, "You've got a tray in front of you with food and silverware and a napkin. Check it out. Eat your lunch." He used his hands, found everything on his tray, and started eating. That was the beginning, but we knew we had a long way to go. One day when Chris was 5, my husband and I saw a blind couple walking down the street. She had a guide dog, and he was using a cane. My husband told Chris that he saw some grown-ups who were blind and that he wanted to meet them. Chris was a bit skeptical, but my husband introduced himself and told the couple that our little boy is blind. These strangers we met on the sidewalk couldn't have been more friendly and welcoming. Their names were Ashley and Jordan Moon, and it turned out that they work at SAVI. They encouraged us to get Chris involved in SAVI's Saturday program for blind children. We signed him up right away, and he started to get real instruction in cane travel and other blindness skills. We are extremely fortunate to live in a school district that has excellent services for blind students. Chris attends a resource room for half of the day, and for the rest of the time, he's fully mainstreamed. For the first several years, he had a wonderful teacher of the visually impaired named Debbie Feliz. She gave Chris a solid foundation in Braille, and she signed him up for the Braille Readers or Leaders contest every year. She absolutely went above and beyond when it came to her students. She spent hours every weekend transcribing material into Braille, so Chris had it when he needed it. Sadly, Ms. Feliz passed away in 2020, and our district is still trying to hire someone full-time to fill her position. Even though we receive excellent services through our school district, we find it extremely helpful to have Ashley or someone else from SAVI attend Chris's IEP meetings with us. Sometimes we have no idea what he needs in terms of technology and class materials, and it's great having somebody to help us all sort it out. When the school went virtual during COVID, SAVI set Chris up with a tutor who made sure he had full access to all his classwork. He was able to keep up with his classmates the whole time. In fact, he made the honor roll when face-to-face classes resumed. He hadn't lost any ground at all. In 2019, my family attended the convention of the National Federation of the Blind of Arizona in Phoenix. It was very interesting to meet parents of blind children from throughout the state. Listening to the stories of other families, I really came to appreciate Chris's program. I learned that other parents have to fight for things as basic as canes and Braille paper. We're so lucky to be in our Mesa school district. I only wish other families were as fortunate as we are. Chris is 10 now, and when I watch him, I realize he's doing all the things that sighted kids his age are able to do. He rides a bike, he goes on the roller coaster at the amusement park, and he crosses quiet streets in our neighborhood. He's learning to cross some of the busier streets now. He even helps me in the kitchen. He's good at slicing tomatoes. A lot of sighted kids his age don't do anything when it comes to preparing meals. Chris learns about cooking at Saturday school, and it's something he really enjoys. Right now, we're working on taking care of clothes and doing laundry. Chris is starting to learn how to pick out clothes that match and how to choose outfits that are right for a particular occasion. My husband and I hadn't figured out how to teach him these skills, but the instructors at Savvy knew how to help. Many of the staff members at Savvy are blind, so Chris sees blind people handling responsibilities and living active, independent lives. The blind adults Chris knows are wonderful role models. They show him that he really will be able to live the life he wants, that blindness never has to hold him back. I talk to other parents of blind children whenever I have the chance. I encourage them to get connected with blind adults through agencies such as Savvy and through the National Federation of the Blind. Even the best school program can't provide everything your child needs. Programs such as Savvy and the NFB training centers can teach the independent living skills your child needs. One thing I tell parents is, don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't ask questions, you'll never get answers. In fact, I encourage parents to approach blind people they see on the street. If you tell them you have a blind child, they will probably be glad to share their knowledge and experience. That's how we found Ashley and Jordan. For us, that chance meeting made all the difference. Editor's note, Savvy Services for the Blind received one of NFB's Dr. Jacob Bulletin Awards in 2015 for its excellent and innovative service to the blind community. There's a photo of African-American man with a cane. The NFB has long recognized that high expectations and a solid grounding in the skills of blindness are the best recipe for the success of our blind and low vision students. Teachers of Tomorrow is an exciting program launched by the NFB to build partnerships with teachers of blind and low vision students. In classrooms across America, blind students are all too often underestimated, underserved, and overlooked. The cumulative impact of these educational experiences is devastating. Illiteracy, unemployment, and isolation. Once in motion, these patterns represent a significant threat to the social and economic vitality of the blind community. Most teachers of blind and low vision students are sighted, and they often lack the experiential disability know-how to counteract blindness stereotypes and to unleash the full potential of their students. Furthermore, many university teacher preparation programs of visual impairment lack the resources to establish meaningful and sustained relationships with the blind community. In some cases, they do not even provide prospective teachers with interactions with blind students prior to graduation. The lack of face-to-face exposure to blind children and adults has been shown to lead directly to negative conceptions about blindness and pervasive low expectations for blind youth. The Teachers of Tomorrow program was developed to meet the need for a community of networking and support for new and early career teachers of blind students. Launching the program. Through the generous financial support of the Gustavus and Louise Pfeiffer Research Foundation, the NFB Teachers of Tomorrow program was revitalized in January 2021. The program brought together 22 new and early career teachers for monthly virtual professional development sessions that centered on the lived experiences of blind people. These gatherings created a direct path between program participants and successful blind adults, offering an unobstructed view of the types of educational opportunities and disability outlooks that prepare blind students for lives of personal and professional fulfillment. While each session had specific learning objectives, these overarching goals served as the foundation for all program activities. Engage teachers in discussions that question how blindness, attitudes, and systemic forces influence schooling practices and related life outcomes. Highlight the various blindness skills, braille, cane travel, accessible technology, etc., that blind people use in school, at work, and in their communities. Develop a more complete portrait of the blind experience as articulated by blind individuals with diverse backgrounds and identity markers. Develop a professional identity that is informed by the blind experience. A year of teaching and learning. During our sessions and throughout the duration of the program, the teachers had access to national experts in blindness education, dedicated mentor teachers, and a transformative environment of positive blindness attitudes. The following is a brief overview of the monthly session topics that were discussed. There was a calendar with topics, and in the interests of time, will not read that, but you can go to the nfb.org and click on the article to read the rest. Also on nfb.org, a blind parent's essential guide to effective communication from public and private schools. There are laws that protect your right to effective communication so that if needed, you are best prepared to advocate for equal access. This guide will provide you with a summary of your protections and links to additional resources. Quote, like all parents, blind parents have the right to participate in their children's education. In 21st century America, parents have an unprecedented level of access to information about their children's schools and academic performance, but blind parents are denied this access when the technology that public school systems use is inaccessible to them. Mark Riccobono, 2015. The problem. Too many blind parents encounter inaccessible technology and communication through their child's school and have been prevented from fully and equally participating in their child's education, including helping their child with homework, monitoring their grades, checking the school's lunch and events calendars, and more. Definition of effective communication. The U.S. Department of Justice has defined effective communication to mean that whatever is written or spoken must be as clear and understandable to people with disabilities as it is for people who do not have disabilities. Understanding your rights. Am I entitled to effective communication from my child's school? Yes. The Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act prohibit discrimination against individuals with disabilities and guarantee your right to communication in formats that you can use. Specifically, Title II of the ADA prohibits discrimination against qualified individuals with disabilities by all state and local governments. This includes all programs, activities, and services of public school districts. Per Title II guidance, public entities must take appropriate steps to ensure that communications with applicants, participants, members of the public, and companions with disabilities are as effective as communications with others. Furthermore, public schools must give primary consideration to your preferred method of communication, whether it is accessible electronic communication, large print, braille, or something else. Title III of the ADA covers places of communication. Public accommodation, doctor's offices, grocery stores, art museums, and private schools, among other spaces, with the important caveat that religious entities, including religious schools, are exempt from the ADA. These covered places of public accommodation cannot discriminate against qualified individuals with disabilities by communicating in a format that is not usable by you. Private schools are encouraged to consult with individuals with disabilities regarding what method of communication is needed. Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act prohibits discrimination against persons with disabilities by entities that receive federal funding. All public school systems receive federal funding, and many private schools, including religious schools, receive federal funding and are thus required to provide equal access to programs, services, and benefits. Am I required to exhaust the IDEA administrative hearing process before pursuing effective communication under the ADA or Rehabilitation Act? Blind parents who request auxiliary aids and effective communication for themselves are not required to exhaust the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act's IDEA's administrative hearing process before filing a discrimination complaint in federal or state court. For guidance regarding a student's rights to effective communication under IDEA and other federal laws, please reference the Department of Education and Justice's Dear Colleague letter and frequently asked questions on effective communication for students with hearing, vision, or speech disabilities in public elementary and secondary schools, FAQS. What is included in effective communication? Effective communication requirements extend beyond telephone calls and emails to include accessible websites, newsletters, calendars, report cards, homework programs, and more. The ADA requires that auxiliary aids and services, sometimes called accommodations, be provided as a way to ensure equal access for individuals with disabilities. This can include Braille, large print, screen reader compatible information, and other methods of accessing information. Advocating for effective communication. If your child's school refuses or fails to provide you with effective communication even after you request it, there are a variety of ways you can advocate. Advocate at the school or district level. You may want to share the following resources with your district: federal guidance on effective communication, Dear Colleague Letter and FAQ, ADA Best Practices Toolkit for State and Local Governments, Chapter 3, Seattle Public Schools, October 2015, Nightingale versus Seattle Public Schools Consent Decree, September 24, 2015, National Federation of the Blind applauds landmark agreement with Seattle Public Schools, October 1, 2014, Nightingale versus Seattle Public Schools amended motion. August 2014, National Federation of the Blind supports blind mothers sued against Seattle Public Schools. When you talk with the district about your request, it can be helpful to document dates and conversations in case you need to refer them in a complaint. Advocate at the state level. You can contact your state's Protection and Advocacy Office to ask whether they can support your advocacy. https://www.ndrn.org/about/ndrn-member-agencies/. You could file a discrimination complaint with your state's Attorney General or Office for Civil Rights. Most states have such an office, but they can vary by name. Advocate at the federal level. You could file a complaint with the U.S. Department of Justice or the U.S. Department of Education. Connecting with the National Federation of the Blind. We encourage you to keep the NFB apprised of technology used by your child's school by regularly completing NFB's education technology survey. The information gathered will help to steer our advocacy and legal work. There's a hot link for that. We further encourage you to become involved with your local NFB affiliate and chapter and the NFB Blind Parents Group. The NFB has built a network of members, support, and expertise in all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. In many cases, a member may have experienced a similar barrier to yours, and you can share suggestions on how best to advocate. Reviewing the NFB's lawsuit against Seattle Public Schools can be helpful to understanding the types of barriers blind parents of school-aged children experience and the NFB's commitment to equal access. There's a list of additional resources, citations, and access that follows, and you can refer to the article on NFB.org to read the rest. From ACB.org, save the date, ACB's 2022 Audio Description Awards Gala, November 29th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, brought to you by the American Council of the Blind. ACB's second annual Audio Description Awards Gala, a virtual event, will take place November 29, 2022. The American Council of the Blind, ACB, proudly announces the second annual Audio Description Awards Gala. The gala will once again celebrate outstanding achievements in audio description in media and expand awareness of its benefits. In recent years, there has been enormous success in expanding audio description for audiences who are blind, low vision, or have other sensory disabilities that create barriers to full inclusion on visual media. The Audio Description Awards Gala will celebrate the best of the best within the art and science of inclusive audio-described media, said Eric Bridges, ACB's Executive Director. Together, we will work to expand awareness of the transformative value that audio description brings to the lives of people with disabilities. Support ACB's Audio Description Project. The American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project, ADP, promotes and advocates for the use of high-quality audio description in television, movies, performing arts, museums, educational materials, and other venues where the presentation of visual media is critical to the understanding and appreciation of the content. The ADP's goals are to sponsor a broad range of activities designed to build awareness of audio description among the general public, as well as its principal users, people who are blind or have low vision. One goal of the 2022 Audio Description Awards Gala is to raise funding to support ACB's audio description project, which works with stakeholders and industry leaders to provide accessible video entertainment through the delivery of audio-described content. To donate, please visit www.awardsgala.org/donate. Save the date and stay up to date. Please save the date to join us on November 29, 2022 to celebrate audio description in media. Visit www.acb.org or www.adaawardsgala.org to learn more. To view the 2021 event, visit https://utu.be/A9Z5FCBFPNU. We encourage you to stay up to date by following along the announcements for this event on Twitter and Instagram at ACB National and on www.adawardsgala.org. From Reuters.com, R-E-U-T-E-R-S, Tesla is sued by drivers over alleged false autopilot full self-driving claims. Article by Jonathan Stemple, posted September 14th. Tesla Inc., TSLA.O, was sued on Wednesday in a proposed class action accusing Elon Musk's electric car company of misleading the public by falsely advertising its autopilot and full self-driving features. The complaint accused Tesla and Musk of having, since 2016, deceptively advertised the technology as fully functioning, or just around the corner, despite knowing that the technology did not work or was non-existent and made vehicles unsafe. Briggs Matsko, M-A-T-S-K-O, the named plaintiff, said Tesla did this to generate excitement about its vehicles, attract investments, boost sales, avoid bankruptcy, drive up its stock price, and become a dominant player in electric vehicles. Tesla has yet to produce anything even remotely approaching a fully self-driving car, Matsko said. The lawsuit filed in federal court in San Francisco seeks unspecified damages for people who, since 2016, bought or leased Tesla vehicles with autopilot, enhanced autopilot, and full self-driving features. Tesla did not immediately respond to requests for comment. It disbanded its media relations department in 2020. The lawsuit followed complaints filed on July 28th by California's Department of Motor Vehicles accusing Tesla of overstating how well its advanced driver systems, ADAS, worked. Remedies there could include suspending Tesla's license in California and requiring restitution to drivers. Tesla has said autopilot enables vehicles to steer, accelerate, and brake within their lanes, while a full self-driving lets vehicles obey traffic signals and change lanes. It also said both technologies require active driver supervision with a fully attentive driver whose hands are on the wheel and do not make the vehicle autonomous. Matsko of Rancho Murrieta, California, said he paid a $5,000 premium for his 2018 Tesla Model X to obtain enhanced autopilot. He also said Tesla drivers who receive software updates effectively act as untrained test engineers and have found myriad problems, including that vehicles steer into oncoming traffic, run red lights, and fail to make routine turns. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has since 2016 opened 38 special investigations of Tesla crashes believed to involve ADAS. 19 deaths were reported in those crashes. The case is Matsko versus Tesla Inc. et al., U.S. District Court, Northern District of California, case number 22-05240. Reporting by Jonathan Stemple in New York. Editing by Jonathan Oatis, O-A-T-I-S. Our standards, with a hot link to the Thomson Reuters Trust Principles. A month ago, I read about the amazing audio description included with the James Webb Telescope images. So here's a little update on that research from futurism.com. Scientists puzzled because James Webb is seeing stuff that shouldn't be there. The models just don't predict this. Article by Maggie Harrison. Over the past several weeks, NASA's ultra-powerful James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, has allowed humankind some unprecedented glimpses into the farthest reaches of our universe. And unsurprisingly, some of these dazzling new observations have raised more questions than they've answered. For a long time, for instance, scientists believed the universe's earliest, oldest galaxies to be small, slightly chaotic, and misshapen systems. But according to the Washington Post, JWST captured imagery has revealed those galaxies to be shockingly massive, not to mention balanced and well-formed, a finding that challenges and will likely rewrite long-held understandings about the origins of our universe. The models just don't predict this, Garth Illingworth, an astronomer at the University of California at Santa Cruz, told WAPO. So apparently they lifted this from the Washington Post. How do you do this in the universe at such an early time? How do you form so many stars so quickly? Move over Hubble. As WAPO explains, older images of the universe, as captured by the recently dethroned Hubble Space Telescope, seemingly confirmed the widespread belief that early galaxies were chaotic, haphazard places. The JWST, however, appears to show that those findings were an illusion based on that Hubble's limited capabilities. We thought the early universe was this chaotic place where all these clumps of star formation and things were all a jumble, the Space Telescope Science Institute's Dan Coe, COE, told WAPO, adding later that before the JWST was launched into orbit, Hubble's imagery was missing all the colder stars and the older stars. We are really only seeing the hot young ones. Time machine. While these findings have taken the scientific community by surprise, they're not at all a cause for alarm. Major technological advancements in astronomy and beyond have a long history of leading to periods of large-scale scientific discovery. Right now, it really feels like we're in one of those watershed moments, and the discoveries made today may well lay the foundation for future breakthroughs, even if they're decades down the line. And really, discoveries like this mean that the JWST is doing exactly what scientists want it to do. It's revealing new, exciting stuff about our mind-bogglingly expansive universe, answering old questions and asking new ones along the way. Read more. Webb Telescope is already challenging what astronomers thought they knew. The Washington Post. More on the James Webb Space Telescope. James Webb catches a glimpse of the most distant star in the universe. I have just about a minute to discuss the iPhone 14 features on Cool Blind Tech from September 12th. iPhone 14 features a Mac-like startup sound to help blind users. As noted by developer Steve Moser, the feature will be located in the Settings app under Accessibility, Power On and Off Sounds, and is designed to make it easier for users to know when an iPhone has been turned on or off. Steve Moser noticed the feature in the GM code for iOS 16, among a number of other last-minute changes that would have given away details of the new products if implemented earlier, such as Action Mode, Dynamic Island Notification Settings, and AirPods Pro volume swipes. A piece of code reads simply, play sound when iPhone is powered on and off. Given how useful this would be as an accessibility feature and that this is a change spotted in the operating system code, some iPhone owners have expressed hope that it might be offered to all handsets capable of running iOS 16. But it appears not. The accessibility expert, Steve Aquino, says he was told it's for iPhone 14 only, and some commenters have even predicted that it might be limited to this year's Pro models. I've run out of time for this week's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.